folks, Steve Adubato, Mary Gamba, Lessons in Leadership. This is part of every interview we're going to be doing that you'll see is part of a series, a mini series within Lessons in Leadership called Discovery and Innovation New Jersey. We're doing in cooperation with our friend Chris Palladino, New Brunswick Development Corporation, the president there. Chris, let everyone know what the heck this initiative, Discovery and Innovation in New Jersey, is. Why are we doing it, A? B, what does it have to do with the logo behind you, the helix?
So look, there's discovery, there's innovation, and then there's job creation, and there's economic growth. And without the idea and giving the idea the place to mature, for people to collaborate, what we found in the past is that a lot of ideas that were generated in New Jersey left New Jersey, and companies were built in other parts of the country and other parts of the world. We have tried to create an environment where we can sense create collaboration amongst a wide variety of researchers and investigators, everybody from a physicist to a life scientist to a mathematician, and to create the next great companies. You know, companies have a tendency to grow where they were started. So we don't want those great ideas to leave New Jersey and to grow into companies that employ our citizens someplace else. And this is about creating an environment, creating a support system that creates the next generation of economic growth in New Jersey.
But Chris, the helix is, and how's that connected to our series, Discovery and Innovation?
Look, it's the Health and Life Science Exchange. And it is a place, it represents an investment of over $2 billion when we're finished, where people are going to work, people are going to live, and they're going to discover, they're going to collaborate. It is an ecosystem. It is not just a group of buildings. It's a place to create the types of spaces that are going to help people take their ideas and to bring them to the second and third and fourth levels of discovery.
And that's the reason for Discovery and Innovation in Jersey. And Mary and I will be talking not just to Chris, but a whole range of other folks that are engaged in discovery and innovation in New Jersey in the world of education, higher education, healthcare, the sciences, technology, important stuff. For Chris, myself, and Mary, this is Lessons in Leadership and Discovery and Innovation right here in New Jersey. On that note, we introduce the Flavin Brothers. I apologize. This is John Flavin, founder and CEO of Portal Innovations, and also Patrick Flavin, president of Portal Innovations. And you gentlemen will admit that you are, in fact, related.
Yes, we are. We're brothers.
And you've been brothers for how long?
As far as I recall, too long.
Did you just say too long?
Too long.
Okay. So first of all, we'll put up the website for Portal Innovations. John, what is Portal Innovations?
We're an early stage investor in life sciences and innovation focused companies that are early stage, oftentimes just spinning out of a university where innovation kind of gets its start. We invest in these companies. We provide critical infrastructure, which is often lacking in new and developing ecosystems outside of the typical hotspots like Boston and the Bay Area. So we are deploying physical capital with our fully equipped laboratory space, financial capital with our early stage investment platform, and then lastly, company building skills in connection to community and talent.
Interesting. Patrick, let me follow up on what your brother said. Since we're doing this on our Lessons in Leadership platform, I'm always fascinated by the leadership challenges, the leadership lessons people pick up over time. What if anything, is unique about excellent leadership in connection with a startup? Patrick?
Yeah, no, that's a big question. I think what we have found as we have been both entrepreneurs ourselves and starting new companies and now investing in entrepreneurs and early stage life sciences companies, it's a hard role to play. So what we see is you get a lot of very intelligent scientific founders emerging from the university, and they know all about the science, they're all about the data. And then as they leave the university and come out to Portal to build their company, you start to see a different personality of those who succeed and those who don't. I think those who succeed recognize they won't be able to do it alone. They have to know when to not necessarily step back, and step out of the role of CEO, but surround themselves with the people who are going to help them build their company. Sometimes you have people that they're afraid to give up their baby, their science, and that, we look for that. We look for people who know what they don't know.
The ability to collaborate, to partner, it's not even giving up. Or maybe, but if someone sees it as giving up, they ain't gonna give up. If someone sees it as making it stronger than I could ever make it alone, that's different. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Patrick. Go ahead.
No, you're spot on. It should be liberating them, empowering them to build bigger. But I do think we notice there are folks who entrench themselves and try to maintain control, and others that do, they recognize that it's a liberating step.
Yeah, the
Hey,
one
Mary, to that.
characteristic that really
Go ahead,
stands
John.
out is listening. Can that individual listen and adapt? And I think that's the liberating characteristic that leads to these other traits that Patrick talked about.
Mary, it's so interesting. You and I have been involved in so many startups, and as we are in this situation right now, we're questioning whether we engage in a startup of another major media operation. But the one thing I know, Mary, based on what Patrick and John just said, if we ever think we can do it alone, we're dead.
It's impossible. And John, that is a perfect segue. I would love to talk a little bit more specifically about what you're doing with the portal in collaboration partnership, not only with the Helix in New Jersey and New Brunswick and Chris Paladino and DevCo, but also with some higher ed institutions such as Rutgers and Princeton. So just tell us a little bit more, John, what does that
And the New Jersey Economic Development Authority.
and the NJEDA,
Okay.
thank you, Steve. Yes, and our friends Tim Sullivan over there. Talk a little bit, John, about what exactly you are doing just to help in that incubator space at the Helix in New Brunswick.
Well, we're really fortunate to be working with a strong set of partners that you just identified. And that's really an important characteristic as we engage with our partners around the country. New Jersey is a storied place as it comes to innovation, not only in large pharma and all the breakthroughs that have happened over time in bringing patients drugs for previously untreatable diseases, but even in telecom and looking at, Bell Labs and what happened there and going back to Thomas Edison himself. So New Jersey is no stranger to innovation. What we are bringing with our model and our partnership with our groups in New Jersey is using a place, working within the Helix to have a beautifully designed floor that allows the kinds of science that we're supporting to be carried out safely. So the kinds of things that we're going to be investing in are coming out of those research institutions that you've mentioned, like Rutgers and Princeton. These founding scientists need a place to work off campus. And it can't just be an office, or it can't be, in their garage or bathtub at home. They're doing chemistry and biology and quantum, and those kinds of technologies need special infrastructure. So we definitely are bringing unique and special infrastructure, but we like to say we're the software to the building's hardware. Portal Innovations is so much about recognizing that great scientists need each other. They need to collaborate, they need to interact with each other serendipitously. So social events, networking, fireside chats, bringing in investors from around the country that we work with in other locations to look at the great things that are happening. We're a convener. We bring people and projects and innovation together.
Real quick follow-up on this, Patrick. First of all, what role do you believe, Patrick, that Chris Paladino has played? Because Chris, and I've known Chris for a long time, the one thing I know about him, as you comment on him, is he's very good at bringing people together, which is a leadership trait. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Chris is, he's been a unique individual. As John pointed out, we're in several places throughout the country, and so we put together these projects on in many different locations. One of the things we always look for to succeed is who is our partner there. In Chris, we identified this is a project we want to be a part of. Not just because of everything John covered of the innovation history in New Jersey, but the team in DevCo and Chris as a leader is a unique leader in that he knows the space very well. I mean, he seems to, bleed scarlet red,
That
Rutgers
would be
blood. You know,
Rutgers. By the way, since you're talking about bleeding scarlet red, he's big on Rutgers. Let me ask you this. There's some competition and turf stuff in the higher ed community. Mary, do we face that sometimes?
We face that all the time. Yes,
Okay.
we're a small state with a lot of fantastic higher ed institutions.
How the heck
For
do we
sure.
get Rutgers and Princeton, who played the first college football game in the history of the United States, to collaborate and partner? No, I'm being serious.
I think I we've seen this. We can look, where we started. The same things used to be said about the University of Chicago and Northwestern and University of Illinois, maroon and purple don't mix. When you talk about
Becomes a two
innovation
teams.
and you talk about building ecosystems, a rising tide lifts all ships. And that's where these forward-looking institutions are recognizing and looking to other innovation ecosystems that have been up and running for a number of years, like Boston and the Bay Area. That's because when it comes to great innovation getting translated into commercial products, you need the market. And the market is what Portal is bringing. It's bringing the outside to the doorstep of the universities. And those researchers, of course, are going to have personal pride in the inventions that they have. But they're coming with humility to collaborate with other groups, and they respect the other science that's happening. In Chicago, we were successful in bringing the Chan Zuckerberg BioHub to Chicago, that was represented by a partnership with the University of Chicago, Northwestern, and the University of Illinois. And people used to say, you can't get the four, three presidents in the same room. We got the three presidents and the governor, Governor Pritzker, in the same room to ultimately make the case because there's so much power in the collaborative outputs that come from this shared
Now,
goal around innovation.
you're saying if it can be done in Illinois, it can be done in New Jersey?
Well, I'll just say you brought up Chris. I would credit Chris. He's the one that was able to do that. I mean, I think when I say he's a unique personality,
Brings
he
people
is in
together.
that, he's a diplomat.
To John and Patrick with Portal Innovations, make sure you check out their website. We'll continue our series, Discovery and Innovation New Jersey, in cooperation with Chris Paladino, who has been very supportive of that effort and introducing us to great innovative leaders like yourselves. Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate it.
It's a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, the pleasure is ours. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Next, please. Okay, we need a neutral expression. Sir, you're smiling.
Oh, am I?
Over 1 million lives in the U.S. have been saved by organ donation. So when you choose to become a donor, you're doing something good, which can make you feel really good.
Next.
Register today at njsn.org.
We are honored to once again be joined by Robert C. Garrett, CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health. Bob, Health, Bob, good to see you.
Great to see you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Bob, let's do this. So many issues in healthcare. This is part of our Leaders in Healthcare series. But one of the first things I want to ask you about is you are coming out with a book, and you'll be joining us when that book is coming out. You did it in cooperation with Dr. Jose Azar, who is the head of quality at Hackensack Meridian Health, one of our longtime underwriters. Why Not is the title. Why not what?
You know, Why Not really defines my career, and I think it's a great leadership lesson, and that's why we chose that title. If you think about it, if you want to be innovative, you want to think out of the box, you want to challenge people, you got to ask the question, why not? Because a lot of people will tell you why they can't do this and why they can't do this, and you know, my answer is, why not? Let's give it a shot. Let's think about how we can get it done. So I thought it was a perfect title. We had some other funky ones, to tell you the truth, Steve, and they were a little bit, you know, too business-like, and I ran them by my wife, actually, and she hated every one of them. So when why not was suggested, she goes, I love that. That's great. That defines you. That defines your leadership style. So we're going with it.
I'm sure people ask that all the time when Hackensack and Meridian, two separate systems, were talking about the possibility of coming together. I guarantee you, because Bob, I was around at the time, I've done a whole range of leadership and communication coaching at HMH, and I remember this. And there are a lot of people, I'm sure, who said, why? And were you thinking, why not?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, my first conversation with John Lloyd, who was my my co-CEO,
the late John
and
Lloyd,
former CEO of Meridian Health, as you know, Steve, great great leader, great person. One of our probably our first conversation about getting together was we both kind of said, "Hey, why not? It makes good sense." So I mean, there's so many links to that why not throughout you know, my history in this profession, and I'm sure a lot of other people too. And the book, by the way, is not just about healthcare; it's about leadership lessons in various industries. So we're excited about it, and hopefully people will get a lot out of it, and we'll take away some of the messages that I've learned over the years.
I'm gonna give you another why not. So Bob and I have had more conversations privately, but also in public situations than he can count or would like to count. But one we had recently, Bob, and I know you'll appreciate this because you and I talked about it. Bob was invited to speak at Montclair State University, my alma mater, the business school. They had students from all over, faculty, all kinds of folks. And it was a Q&A with Bob. And it was recorded, and I've seen the video. And Bob, I don't know if people know this, but we did not have one conversation before we did it in front of a live audience of several hundred people as to what we would talk about. Is that accurate?
That is absolutely accurate. You know, we just went in kind of cold, and you know, let's go, let's fire away.
Why not? And you know what's? I'll tell you why that's interesting. Is Bob and I have talked about public communication and its connection to leadership for years. You have made it a priority to be an impactful, engaging, frankly, powerful public communicator. Why is that something that you have to practice and work at for all of us, as opposed to, oh, it just every leader can do that? That's just not true.
No, I think, you know, listen, as leaders, or as in my case, as being the chief executive officer for an organization like Hackensack Meridian Health, one of my roles is to be the storyteller. You know, I think we have a good story to tell, but we got to get that story out there because we can help so many more people by telling that story. So I think it's important, you know, to have good communication skills so you can effectively tell your story. Every organization has a unique story to tell. Every leader has a different perspective on that story to tell. So I think it's really incumbent upon leaders to really, you know, be schooled in communication and you know, really being able to tell that story effectively. I mean, you are the spokesperson for your organization.
Yeah, and along those lines, I want to follow up on this. In the spirit of putting out there not only what's great about your system and, you know, and what you're proud of, well, U.S. News and World Report, check it out and see where HMH is. But also, Bob, having to be able to communicate in a very candid, direct way about the incredible challenges facing healthcare 2025, moving it to 2026, of all the many challenges, what is a really significant, quote, challenge that you and other healthcare leaders face every day?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of challenges
for
out
a
there,
while.
but I'm not going to be shy about U.S. News and World Report either. So we did make, for the first time in New Jersey healthcare history, Hackensack University Medical Center was ranked in the top 20 hospitals in the nation, making the honor roll list. So my big shout out to my colleagues at HUMC for that incredible accomplishment. And beyond the Steve, beyond the recognition, it's about saving lives. It's about avoiding complications. It's about not having unnecessary readmission. So there's a lot of great data that goes behind that recognition. Now, having said that, we are in a in an area in an era, I should say, of significant challenges. There's the bill that was just passed in Washington recently, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or I guess they call it H.R. 1 now, however it's called. It cuts Medicaid reimbursement significantly across the country, in New Jersey and across the country. It's the biggest one-time hit to the safety net system in really the history of the U.S., and certainly since Medicare and Medicaid came into existence. $1 trillion of cuts over several years will happen. But in addition to that, the estimate is that 17 million Americans who have insurance today will not have insurance as a result of the passage of this bill. It hits the Medicaid population the hardest. At Hackensack Meridian Health, we take care of about 20% of all Medicaid patients in the state. So that's about 400,000 Medicaid population in New Jersey. So it is by any stretch, it's a very, very significant challenge. I think in healthcare, we're calling it a big headwind coming at us.
That's only one of many challenges. Bob, I want to do this because there's so many more things to talk about. Would you mind staying with us? We're going to do an additional segment. We'll air that on another edition of One on One. But Bob, was that okay with you? I know you have a ridiculous schedule.
Yeah, why not?
I saw what you just did, Bob. That's Bob Garrett, who is not only the CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health, but the co-author with Dr. Jose Azar at HMH of a book called Why Not? Why not go to a break? And we'll be back right after this.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership. Mary and I have a few minutes on the back end. Mary, I know we've talked about meetings a lot. We do a lot of leadership and communication coaching around, hey, why are your meetings so bad? Why do you have so many meetings? Why are those meetings so long? Why are the people in the meeting not even people who need to be in the meeting? Why are you wasting everyone's time? It goes on forever, doesn't it, Mary?
It sure does. When it comes to meetings, it is so critical, especially with the technology that we have with Zoom. People just fill in your electronic schedule. They see you have a half hour, window in there. Let me just get a quick meeting on Mary's schedule. You need time. You almost have to schedule fake meetings in there if you just want to take a walk, grab a snack, have a bio break, et cetera.
So I'm going to do this. Even though this is not an official mini seminar, I'm going to turn it into one before we finish. This is called Creating a Culture of Engagement. And you might ask, what does that have to do with meetings? All right, here we go. This is creating a culture of engagement, meaning our meetings need to be more engaging, interactive, everything we do. I got this quote, Mary. I know you don't love this quote from Benjamin Franklin. Tell me and I will forget. Teach me and I will remember. Engage me and I will learn and care. Now, I tweaked that a little bit. So this is about, first of all, why is it so important to have a culture that's engaging and interactive, Mary?
Oh, because life would be boring and dull. So, sure, you need to be serious. You need to get the work done, but you need to engage others. If you don't engage others and you're just dictating and telling people what to do and not listening to their opinions, they're just going to tune out and just go through the motions. And that's not good for any organization.
In that spirit, I'm going to listen more. First bullet point, talk less, listen more. Why is it so hard for so many of us?
It is so hard because we feel like we are the most important person in the room. We have something really good to say. Our ego gets in the way. What we need to do is pause, because if we listen to what other people have to say, we're going to learn something pretty valuable.
Follow up on that. The only way to have a real culture of engagement is to ask probing, open-ended questions of specific people. Ask probing, open-ended questions. Why is that engaging, Mary?
It is because you're inviting them into the conversation. If you're just sitting there having conversations with someone, telling them something, downloading information, by pulling them in, whether it's just in a conversation with one-on-one, if it's in a meeting with a team, that's even more important to invite people in. If not, they're going to just start multitasking, check their email, and not really be engaged. And frankly, you're paying them, so you are just throwing money away.
Absolutely, and stealing people's time. Mm-hmm. How about this third bullet point? Raise the bar. What does that mean? I argue we need to raise the bar of what we expect from everyone in the organization. Raise the bar. Don't stop telling people what to do all the time. I know I do it a lot, but I also ask a lot of people and say, this is, you're the leader of this. This is what we need. Raise the bar. What does that have to do with engagement?
It has everything to do with engagement. If you set the expectation and you set that culture, then people will start to emulate your behavior. So then when they're leading meetings, when they're talking to their colleagues and peers, they will raise the bar. They will say, okay, Steve expects this of me. I should expect this of those around me as well.
One more quickie on this. So it's not just meetings. A culture of engagement is a lot about meetings, but it's not just meetings. This is my thinking, Mary. Fourth bullet point. In creating a culture of engagement, you must be present. And I know we talked with Elvin before about all of us multitasking, but what is the connection between, and this is a catch-22, why should I be present if you're not engaging me?
It is, yeah. It is. But if you are engaging the people around you, then those people should be present.
But here's the trick. I facilitated with you so many different situations, and I, in my mind, I'm asking probing questions. I'm calling people by name. I'm pulling them in. I'm inviting them into the party by saying, we want to know what you think. And I could still see them messing around with their phone. Now, I don't want to play gotcha, but here's the thing. I believe that to create a culture of engagement, you have to demand people being present. Realistic?
I think it is realistic. I think that if you set that expectation, people may slack off a little bit on their, you know, being present, and you can call them out literally. And I do mean it, call them out. So if that happens, you just snap them back in and remind them of why it's important to be present and be there in that moment.
You're saying, I know we have to go, but in creating a culture of engagement, you say call people out sometimes?
Yeah, if you see, we've done it in our seminars. Wow. You see somebody looking down or looking down at their phone, and you'll call them by name. And sometimes you'll do it in a polite way, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I missed the question because I had to deal with something. But you call them out. And Elvin is calling us out that we need to say goodbye.
Mary, why don't you formally say goodbye, and I won't say a word.
That'll be spectacular. Thank you so much for watching Steve and I on Lessons in Leadership. We'll catch you next time.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
How long you been waiting?
About a half hour.
Brutal. This keeps up, I'm gonna miss my pickleball game.
I've been waiting 8 years for a kidney. What can you do?
Over 100,000 people in the U.S. are waiting for a life-saving transplant. But you can do your part in an instant. Register as an organ donor today at njsn.org.